Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program broadcast. The topic tonight comes from a few different places. First of all, it comes from me re-entering the field work and working as a field therapist. For the last couple of months, I've had my own group and watching the young men and kind of how they respond to being sent to a program. What do they think the project is here? And how do they respond? What do they think that we're trying to accomplish and their parents are trying to accomplish through this process? It also comes from a place that I constantly revisit, which is this idea about how we give up the real self in order to protect ourselves from being abandoned and rejected. And finally, I'm borrowing from my wife's blog, something she wrote for our website a few years ago, reflecting in her own therapy, in her own process around the difference between being right, getting it right, and getting it real. So with that interesting introduction, let's get right into tonight's work. Again, the first place it comes from is responding to Evoke. And the first place that I think that I see students and clients respond to is that the solution to the process is to being good. You know, what do they think they're trying to accomplish? Well, it comes out in their letters, in their responses to therapy, which is, I'm sorry, I did the wrong thing. You know, my behavior was bad. I'm going to do the right thing in this process. And so when we watch how they respond, when we watch how they think that we want them to respond, we learn a little bit about this wound, about this idea that it's about being good. Oftentimes, they're overwhelmed with this idea about how much they hurt their parents, right? Their initial letters and responses, the ones that are open to the processes at all, they come to a place of seeing, I hurt my parents. I must be doing something wrong, something bad, because these are the people that love me most of anybody in the world. And that's important. We're going to get to that a little bit later. They make promises about what they're going to do better, right? The idea is, if I do better, if I promise to better, if I commit, and they believe it, then I'm going to be seen by my parents as having accomplished the goal of therapy. So that's what a lot of the students come with, this idea that they need to do better. And what I talk about is there's a lot of work in between getting sent here, the challenges, the struggles, and healing. They look for the answers. They want to know the format, right? They want us to tell them, what are we looking for in a letter? What does a good assignment look like? And then I have this other idea that I shared with my group just yesterday about where the shame cycle came from. Years ago, I noticed as I started in wilderness therapy that I saw these young men coming into our program and really feeling a lot of emotion and regret. They would read their, what we call then, impact letters, their hopes and intentions letters, and they would cry, sob for the things that they had done. And almost inevitably, most of them would say at the end of the reading of these letters, I see what I've done to my parents. I see how I've impacted my family. And then 2 minutes, 2 days, 2 weeks later, we would often see them go back into old patterns. And so I had to kind of put those two things together, see how they fit. How could somebody who feels genuine, deep, and profound regret go back to the same behavior that was hurting everybody in the program? And so I was sitting outside of my therapist's office and I took a napkin out and I wrote this cycle down, this idea down. That although they come from a place of great shame, right? They think that that's the solution. It's actually part of the problem. They're good at kind of fitting into what other people need, what their parents need, being responsible for their parents' disappointment, sadness. You know, a lot of them saying things like, I want to make my parents proud. And us saying, that's not what this is about. It's not about hurting your parents. It's about hurting you. It's not about making your parents proud. It's about living a meaningful and rich life in the process. So how do we get here? How do we come, so many of us, to this place where we're trying to get it right instead of being real and being authentic? We first learn to discard or get rid of those parts of us that made other people uncomfortable in our original context, that made our parents upset or worried. Now, sometimes there's kind of a reaction formation, a backlash, where people will react exactly the opposite, right? Really hurtful, extra rebellious. But it really often has the same kind of origin. It's this weight and this pressure that I have to be a certain way to be accepted. If my parents are upset, they might leave me. And as human beings, we can't do this on our own. Our greatest asset as human beings are each other. And left to our own devices as children, we wouldn't survive. So I learned from the beginning to get rid of those parts, to discard those parts, to deny those parts that pose a threat to my survival. And essentially, I'm taking care of my parents. Now, almost no parent would identify with this idea of my child is taking care of me. So with that idea, it's important for us to understand what that looks like. And what it looks like is my sadness, my serenity is my child's responsibility. If I'm frustrated, disappointed, or for that matter, proud, it's my child's responsibility. The child needs to show up in a certain way in order for the parent to feel okay. And sometimes it's really subtle, like a parent being worried and concerned about something that a child is doing that's a problem. And in some ways, it's much more obvious, where a child is saying, you're embarrassing me, right? So depending on how it's communicated, we may have some awareness about this, but for most of us, we don't have an awareness of a process. And even though I was educated about this, it wasn't something that I identified with. It wasn't something as a parent that I saw even in myself, although that I did it. And then what can happen with programs or therapists, right? We can make the mistake of allowing ourselves to be enlisted in this project of getting kids to a certain place so that the parents are relieved and happy. And that's not our job. Our job is to help the child become a whole, integrated, healthy self and to kind of help the parent understand what that is, what that looks like, and how to support it. We worry about saying the wrong things. Children worry about saying the wrong things, and that's how they show up. I was sharing with a staff member recently that the letter of awareness, or what we used to call the letter of accountability, and the impact letter that a child writes to a parent are essentially the same thing, right? And I said to one of my students this week, I'm gonna speak a paragraph, and I'm gonna ask you which this is, from a letter of awareness or an impact letter. And I said something like this. You know, this is me writing to my parents. When you guys got divorced, I was scared. I was angry that you guys couldn't just make it work and get along. And so to deal with that anger, I lashed out. I took my anger out on you. I lashed out at school and at my brothers. So that process is the same, really. When I asked the student, he said, well, that's a letter of awareness. That's you taking accountability. And what I said was, it's both. Right? It's me talking about my experience, what I felt, and how I dealt with it. And so while we talk about the impact letter to parents and the letter of awareness as different assignments coming from different places, different perspectives, it's essentially all the same thing. I told one student recently, just write an excuse letter. If you don't know how to start, just write a letter that excuses all of your behavior. What in your mind justified you acting out this way? And then what I'm going to do, I'm going to take that information. If that's the door that you'll walk through, that's what you'll give me. And I'll talk about it and how to communicate it in more assertive ways. I think sometimes we use labels, diagnoses, and jargon to silence our children. You know, we label them with things like the victim stance, or you're justifying, or you're rationalizing. And while some of those labels might be accurate, they also tend to shut down communication. And so we got to give them enough room. I had a student recently who had a few small temper tantrums during the week, and that was given in his weekly report. And I thought to myself while I was listening to the report, I thought, I threw a few temper tantrums this week too. But luckily I had the space to kind of sort that out on my own. Nobody put me in treatment. So we develop a greater capacity. We provide space for the children. And we develop more capable hearing and seeing. Yes, we're going to teach them how to say it more assertively. We're going to teach them the difference between awareness, ownership, and accountability and blame. We're going to do all of that. But first, we're going to build a foundation of where are you hurting? Where's the pain? Where's the anger? Where's the sadness? Where's the grief? And where's the loss? This is from my wife's blog. And it also makes me look good, so I thought I'd share it. She said, I remember a moment when my old context was running the show. My husband and I were at Disneyland with our two youngest children, 2 and 8 years old at the time. I was feeling extremely anxious. How would we see and do everything? Please a 2 and an 8-year-old's very different needs in a short period of time. I became obsessive and anxious, strategizing on the right way to do Disneyland. Thankfully, my husband said to me gently, instead of trying to do it right, what if we do Disneyland wrong? Let's just get it completely wrong. At first, I felt patronized and angry. I had legitimate concerns, but he held my hand and looked at me sincerely, and I realized he might be onto something. I soon felt the anxiety could lift, and off we went. Admittedly, throughout the day, I would slip back into the old context. Should we eat at Ariel's Grotto, or will Peter Pan's Grill have more characters? How will we make it to the parade on time? And when my husband would say, honey, remember, we were trying to get this wrong, I would laugh and the anxiety would die down. And we ended up having a great time without all those expectations. So part of where this is born is trauma in the brain. She goes on later to explain her parents and their characteristics, a father who was anxious and obsessive and always thinking that there was one right way to do things, and a mother who was dealing with her own trauma and fear, and that was spilling out all over the place. And my wife goes on to say, through their lenses, I interpreted the world that the world wasn't safe and one must be on guard, watchful, prepared for any possible mishap. The way to avoid these pitfalls was to learn to be good, right, strong, or perfect. This way of thinking, I concluded, could protect me from what the world might send my way. We all do this with our caregivers. Neurobiologists confirm that we already know intuitively, that we are hardwired by our original contexts. The trick is to become aware of those contexts as they arise and make a conscious choice to challenge the old scripts and update the software. So for many of our students, they're operating from a place of a fight, flight, or freeze. Their amygdala, their lower brain, their reptilian brain, their primitive brain is all already on fire. And so when we come to them with our anger, our frustration, our anxiety, when we come to them with something that they perceive as a threat to who they are, we add a little bit of fuel to that fire and it goes off. And they respond in one of those three ways. Our contexts, the important thing about our contexts are to ask, what is it a safe context? Did we feel safe? Did we feel held and taken care of? Where was the context full of anxiety, anger, fear, trauma, or worry? Not just in us, but in our parents. And then really what comes out of that is healthy versus unhealthy attachment somewhere on a continuum. We ask ourselves, how was I seen? Was I seen as a problem? Was I seen as a screw-up? Was I seen as somebody not living up to their potential? How was I seen? Was my inner world sought after and seen? Was somebody in my life, did they not reduce me to behaviors, but rather wonder what my internal world was like? What I was feeling, what I was thinking. Was I objectified or consumed? And what that means is, did I just become a reflection of my parents? If I did well, my parents did a good job. If I did poorly or made poor choices, my parents weren't doing well. Was I objectified? Consumed, meaning was I just merely a part of my parents, an extension of my parents? And did my parents know the truth? Did they know my truth? Or was I invited to discover my truth? And was I allowed to experiment with my truth? Back into therapy. So we have these wounds. We have this original context. We have this reparative work to do with our brain, with our trauma. Our family is going to change during this process. Our family is going to learn how to both contain the child and show up and develop a sense of self, each person. A priest, a rabbi, a cop, and a parent walk into a wilderness therapy group. One of the things I often say to my clients, my students, by the way they respond, is I say, I'm not your priest or I'm not your rabbi. I'm not a cop. I'm not a probation officer. I'm not a teacher. I'm not your parent. I'm a therapist. And that's something very different. I'm not trying to fix you. I'm trying to understand you. And that's a big difference. And in understanding somebody, they heal. It's really redefining therapy away from problem solving, crisis management, although that does happen in therapy. It moves from symptom reduction to healing. And so many times when therapists are struggling with a client, it's when the therapist has an agenda to fix the person. When some pressure from inside or outside the therapist is generating this energy that the client needs to show up in a certain way. For the therapist's dilemma, anxiety, worry, frustration to be alleviated. And it really just creates the exact same wound that was happening in the original context. Therapy is not a place that we go to hear hard things, but it's a place that we go to say hard things and take the risk that this new context will react exactly the same way that things have in the past, with frustration, anxiety, worry, judgment, concern, disappointment. It's the difference between healing versus being good. Like Carl Jung said, illustrated when he said, I would rather be whole than good. It's the idea of being wounded rather than broken. The shift that we made from impact letter to children to hopes and intentions letter reflects this transformation of an idea of therapy. The mother tongue is this idea that we're going to be drawn back into our old ways of responding, all of us. We do it in our marriages. We do it with our children. We do it in our friendships. In Al-Anon, they say, if it's hysterical, it's historical. Right? That's our old context. Some old wound that's coming up being activated that we respond in rigid fight or flight or freeze ways, controlling ways. And our children, because they're struggling with mental health issues, they're asking us, go take care of yourself because I don't want to have to. Go to therapy. Tell somebody else about your anxiety, your fear, your frustration, your disappointment. I'm already struggling and scared and doing the best that I can. And when you come at me with all of those things, it's too much. So take care of that somewhere else. So when you show up in a discussion with me, you can be there for me. Because I can't be there for you, especially in the compromised state that I'm in right now. And it's this idea that lay people sometimes have that guilt and shame can help you, can direct you, can guide you, but really where we know them to be the problems. Therapy is a place we go to receive a different response than the one we received in earlier contexts, to be received completely and entirely. An adequate therapist responds to our warts, our wounds, and our symptoms with calmness, understanding, patience, and curiosity. Very hard to do, I might say, as a parent. I'm a lot better at it with my clients than I am with my children. The therapist is not anxious to fix us, but rather is passionate about finding us. And when we are found and seen without anxiety, frustration, or disappointment we experience in earlier contexts, we come to believe that we are okay. We are able to look deeply into ourselves, into our wounds, and our traumas with compassion and understanding, and we heal. And Gill says, part of the business of psychotherapy is to discover and create alternative experiences for thoughts, feelings, attitudes, and beliefs. This is undertaken in the service of freeing people to be able to re-experience themselves. That's really what's happening in therapy. You're re-experiencing yourself. Because you're sitting in a relationship that sees and holds you differently. Freeing people to be able to re-experience themselves in a safe but different context. The virtue of talking to an empathic and accepting person who has a different base is that it quickly illuminates one's own. What was once automatic and unconscious is noticed and discussed. The world is allowed to become one of noticeable constructions. Getting in this different context, we then can look back on our old context and see it for what it was. And that is true for all of us. That's true for parents who send their children to us. I love this quote. I saw this from a friend today who shared this quote from Carl Rogers. When a person realizes he has been deeply hurt, his eyes moisten. I think in some real sense, he is weeping for joy. It is as though he were saying, thank God somebody heard me. Someone knows what it's like to be me. And that's from the famous therapist, master therapist, Carl Rogers. So what is the take home? We learn to value the mistakes, the struggles. We learn to develop enough capacity to hold them with patience. And our children require more patience and capacity than other children. We change our language from getting it right to being real. We get rid of the parts of our language like good, bad, right, wrong, have to, need to, must, ought to, and should. And we start talking about feelings and thoughts and ideas and experiences, and we own those in ourselves. We understand the original context that we came from, because the wounds that we're passing on to our children, guess where those came from? They came from our parents, and guess where they got their wounds? From their parents, and so on and so on and so on. We move from fixing to understanding and knowing that understanding heals. And we can change the context today, no matter how old your child is, and it's never too late. During a consultation recently with one of our therapists with a child who was struggling profoundly, I offered the idea, just see and understand the world from his perspective. Just tell him you understand. Tell him you're sorry. Tell him you get it. And even just a few minutes of being seen by a powerful person in his life, he can take that copy with him and it can make a difference throughout his life. It's never too late, never too little. And remember that being seen is absolutely everything. All right, I'm happy to take any live questions. Looks like there are none. All right. We want you to attend 6 12-step support groups before your child leaves. If you haven't done it, doesn't matter where you are, just try 6 meetings. If nothing else, like I always say, you'll know what it's like. You'll know what you're asking your child to do. Because your resistance, the reasons for not going, are the same things that your children have for not wanting to go to therapy. You can also go to NAMI.org for classes and information, free services. Follow us on social media. You can listen to these broadcasts on the podcast app on iPhone devices or iOS devices. Just go to the podcast app and search Evoke Therapy Programs, or in an Android device, download the SoundCloud app and search Evoke Therapy Programs, or online, go to soundcloud.com and search Evoke Therapy Programs. On Twitter and Instagram, we're at Evoke Therapy. On Facebook, search Evoke Therapy Programs. You can find the Evoke Family Foundation on Facebook to become involved in an organization that helps people that can't afford therapy. And then go to our blog for more information. My book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, is available on Amazon right now. The warehouse had to recall a bunch of books that weren't printed well. So go to the underneath the paperback, the new options, click there, and you can buy it directly from Evoke Therapy Programs. The next workshop coming up that we would like all current parents to go to is September 22nd and 23rd. Contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com for more information. Our intensives, if you want to do a deep dive, if you want to discover your context, which, by the way, I can think of no more powerful and profound way to impact your children positively, come to one of our intensives. The next one is Finding You, November 7th through 11th. And then if you've been to a Finding You and you want to come, I'll be running the next Finding You 2, November 25th to 29th. And then we're going to have alumni intensives for former students coming up in December and January. Contact intensives at evoketherapy.com for more information. Our parent support group's coming up, Seattle, October 24th, Birmingham, Alabama, October 26th, Chicago, Illinois, November 6th, New York, New York, November 12th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, November 14th. Contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com for more information. You can also look at our pursuit trips for families or young adults, sober fun, and for family adventure. Think of a therapy refresh. All right, any questions? No further questions or comments. The next broadcast, this is important for all of you. If you have family, friends, extended family, siblings of the children they're at, Evoke, that you want to come to listen, to hear some of what we talk about, I'll address some frequently asked questions, but I'll also take live questions, and you could submit questions in advance that I'll answer. If you have a question that you get asked from a friend or from a child that you want to ask me, see how I would answer it, send those in. That next one will be next Thursday, October 25th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time. All right, folks, thanks for joining us. I hope this is a helpful point of contact. I hope these are helpful for you. Good luck in your journey. Thank you, on behalf of your children. Have a great evening, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.